Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be those of Pastor Doug Riggs. And we're going to be talking about the dark side. There really are dark and sinister spiritual forces out there that are not imaginary. They're real. We hear a lot of talk about the supernatural, and a lot of people are intrigued by it. And there is a supernatural. There is another dimension out there. There are beings that can, of course, come back and forth, the demonic beings, and I'm sure there are angels as well, that look after those of us who have given our lives to the Lord. But there are demonic beings out there that would counter the influence and everything that's good and worthwhile in the world today. Well, Pastor Doug Riggs has been studying a lot of these things for many years, is actively engaged in this. And so, without further ado, Doug, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
It's my privilege, and it's great to be on your program, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, about your ministry, and, of course, what you're trying to accomplish?
Well, back in the mid-70s, just studying the Word, especially the book of Ephesians, began to see a number of what is called indefinite temporal clauses, like the church is to come to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, fullness of the Gentiles is to come into the body of Christ, and there's just a number of contingencies, and I began to ask the Lord, Stan, what do you need in order to see this age consummated? And what is standing in the way? And I have one life, and I'd like to give my life to you, Lord, to see, my part, to see this age consummated so Jesus Christ would not have to wait and be able to return. Well, I had no idea what I was asking, because there are plenty of things from the enemy standpoint that have been in place for centuries to thwart the coming of the Lord, to thwart God's purpose for the church, and to thwart the fullness of the Gentiles coming to the body of Christ. And so after I finished seminary, I began to pastor a little Bible church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and there were gathered to me people who had a heart for God, but also had a history, had a hidden occult history through trauma-based mind control. Not all at the same level. Some were higher level than others. And as that began to unravel in the mid-80s, I discovered the phenomenon that was then known as multiple personality disorder. That was carefully structured and put in place by Nazi-type doctors who were working for members of the royal family to carry out their agenda to bring in their Christ. And so my goal has been to see people be set free and come to maturity, but in the process, these carefully laid plans of the enemy have created these strongholds that has been an extremely a great challenge to see undone.
Well, of course, most people find it very difficult to believe that there really are these people with these dissociative personalities. That's what they call it today, but it's a split personality, and it's actually produced by trauma-based mind control.
Yes.
And, of course, terrible, terrible things. A lot of this is satanic ritual abuse. And, of course, this came to be understood in the late 80s and early 90s. And then, of course, the CIA comes up with their false memory syndrome organization all across America, a planned program, of course, to convince us that there is no such thing as false, as satanic ritual abuse. And that really, of course, this is all a false memory. They invested a great deal of time and effort into that for a very specific purpose, because they didn't want the public to know that about the other dimension and about the satanic forces in America today. Will you go ahead and pick up the story there?
Yes, I think when it comes to the CIA, the MKUltra program that was started back in the early 50s, which was an umbrella with a 149 sub-projects. As they were carrying out their experimentation, and we know Dr. Ewan Cameron in Montreal was doing his depatterning, and he was financed by the CIA, there were a number that sued the CIA, and of course they settled that out of court. And so it would behoove those that were working in that particular area to be on the board of the false memory syndrome, because you know, this is costing them money to have to pay out to those people who have been experimented on.
In fact, the story of Dr. Human Cameron is really one of the most bizarre sorts of stories of all time. And the fact that most people have never heard of it, it simply reflects the control that exists over the media in America today.
Yes, that's correct. I think the whole, you know, 1 John 5:19 says the whole world, the whole satanic cosmos, lies in the power of the evil one. And that certainly doesn't exclude the media, does it, Dr. Scanlon?
It certainly doesn't. Well, anyway, so what happened as far as your effort? I mean, people are being brought to you or coming to you because they have this dissociative personalities, and of course, nobody believes them. I mean, the whole story is just so bizarre. How could such things be going on in America today and nobody know about it?
Well, that's the whole point. When Nazi Germany was defeated in World War II, the SS got together at, in various different ways, and they planned to carry on the Third Reich, only it was to be ultimately the Fourth Reich, and it would be brought about through occult means, and it wouldn't come through Germany. It would be a worldwide phenomenon. And the things that they learned, the techniques they learned through the work of Dr. Mengele at Auschwitz, the trauma-based mind control, the twinning, they took this technology, and some of these doctors were brought to the country, to the United States, and sheltered under Operation Paperclip. And the CIA got a hold of them, and they used them to create their own operatives so that they would be an operative and not even know they're an operative. And I think for the listening audience, to understand this is to understand the nature of trauma. If you look at the Iraqi soldiers that are coming back today who are suffering, over 10% are suffering post-traumatic stress disorder, this is because of trauma they're experiencing in battle. But if you take that kind of trauma and much worse and subject a little child to that from the earliest childhood, their identity fragments. And through chronic trauma that the...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment, Doug. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Pastor Doug is talking about this whole idea of taking a child and submitting them to terrible psychological trauma. And, of course, this is how you create a dissociative personality. And people say, why, who in their right mind would want to harm a child? And if this sort of thing was going on, everybody would know about it, be up in arms. And no, the truth of the matter is, if everybody, the reason you don't know about it is because the media is controlled. And there really are people not in their right mind, but of course they have a different worldview, that actually have these programs. In fact, it was a television program many years ago. It was called The Pretender. And it was the story of a little boy who had been taken, by the government, and submitted to all sorts of horrible things. But, of course, you can actually alter the child's personality so they'll have a photographic memory. Now, they will have very, very special talents and capabilities as part of their dissociative personality. And that was a television story. The trouble is, as preposterous as it was, the story of The Pretender was really based upon what's going on in America and throughout the world today. And the fact, because you saw it on television, you know it's all make-believe, but the tragedy, it isn't make-believe, is it, Pastor Doug?
No, in fact, there's a therapist that I was in touch with that knew the screenwriter for the screenwrite person that wrote the script for Conspiracy
You're talking about Mel Gibson?
Yeah, Mel Gibson,
right.
Conspiracy Theory, whatever the title was, but the part of this screenwrite in that, the therapist that I talked with, her first name is Pam, she knew the person, and that whole background was actually based on truth. And so they put this up on the media so that if people come forward and begin to talk about these kinds of things, they just, you know, they already got their bases covered. You know, you've been watching too many movies, etc., and so therefore it's easy to explain it away.
Well, it is real. In fact, we've had several people here in our area. One woman is a victim of satanic child abuse, came from a satanic family. Another, suddenly, I'm not sure how she underwent this, but, finally she got her mind straightened out because it was of a therapist here in Santa Cruz. But the therapist really is almost afraid to come on the radio and talk about these things publicly because they sound so strange. And yet, of course, she's seen a number of these cases. They are real. Certainly, Dr. Colin Ross down in Texas, and we carry his book. It used to be Operation Bluebird. That was the name of the government project. Now it's called, the book is called The CIA Doctors. But it's so important that people, get that information and read it and understand what is really going on. We have interviews with Colin Ross in our four-tape set on Operation Paperclip. But go right ahead, Doug. So anyway, how did you learn how to handle these and how to help these people? Because, of course, they're desperate for help. They go to the average psychiatrist, the average doctor. They have no idea what's going on. They find it preposterous to believe this could actually have happened.
Well, I'm delighted that you're going to have Russ Dizdar on your program. As we've talked and as I've read through some of his material, Russ and I were at a seminar back in the early 90s, the first annual conference, Rich Abuse and Mind Control, and we met a number of top-level people, Alan Shefflin and Dr. Corey Hammond, who were secular people who were trying to help a therapist to understand what they were dealing with, because the psychiatric and the professional people were told that this was a very rare disorder. Multiple personality disorder, and really, it's as common as trauma and dysfunctional families are in existence in our family structure today. And if you have any kind of abuse, it doesn't have to be ritual abuse, chronic abuse, verbal abuse. A child can split and create alternate personalities. But when the level that I'm talking about, and the reason I mentioned this particular conference. That Russ Dizdar was attended along with myself back in the early 90s, I met a man by the name of Daniel Ryder. And he was in our church back in the 90s. And on one of his books, he wrote one titled Breaking the Circle of Ritual Abuse. But I think the last book he wrote is called Cover Up of the Century, Satanic Ritual Crime and World Conspiracy. It's a very rare book, but people can order it through the interlibrary loan at their public library. But in the last chapter, Daniel wrote on this, it's this particular aspect of world conspiracy, and he quotes an individual and he gives a pseudonym to it. And he says that this particular individual, whom he calls John Smith for safety reasons, he too said that some of these cult survivors that he had been working with have been turned into conditioned operatives to be used as, in essence, dissociative pawns for drug dealing, prostitution, weapon sales, assassinations. He used the metaphor of an army of worker ants who are being controlled by megalomaniacs who ultimately want total power and world dominion. Many cult survivors and others in diverse research areas around the world have independently stated that the international leadership of the cult is called the Illuminati. Now, when we say Illuminati, we think that goes back to Adam Weishaupt. Actually, that was just bringing it back to the surface. The Illuminated Ones goes all the way back to the old Babylonian Empire and the secret societies and that which was the cult of the mother goddess and all that which we find in world religions. It has its source back in the old Babylonian Empire. So this was just a resurgence under Weishaupt, and it has moved forward currently in the present, and it is a dominating power. But we have to understand this is not a cabal of just men. We know Psalm 2, and especially if you read it in the Hebrew, that it's the Gentile nations. It's not a Jewish conspiracy. It's the nations come together as a tumultuous throng, as one spirit and one mind against the Lord in our Christ. So it is there. But Satan is the ultimate conspirator against God and the people of God and mankind. We have to understand that he is the prince of the power of the air and that men are just agents through whom he works.
Well, I think that people really have to understand that going all the way back to Babylon, there have always been so-called the mysteries or the mystery religions or secret societies. But, of course, the bulwark of the secret societies was the mysteries that were passed down, the secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years. That's and right. They've always been secret societies. They existed all throughout the Middle East, and then they were tied into the Assassins, they were tied into the into the Knights Templars, they were tied into the Rosicrucians, they were tied into the people who wrote the Kabbalah, which was nothing more than the codification of the ancient knowledge of the ancient mystery religions, carried forward into Christian Gnosticism, forward into the Illuminati, then into modern-day Masonry, and now into so many of the other covert organizations working together. And, of course, there is a power out there you can tap into, but certainly you don't want to, because it is organized evil and it'll cost you your eternal soul. A lot of people have tapped into it and had great wealth and great fame. And they've made great discoveries, like Thomas Edison. He was deeply involved in the occult. All the wonderful things that he gave us were the byproduct of, course, tapping into the other side, but the average individual doesn't understand that. Although if you read Edison's autobiography, he will tell you about going into these altered states of consciousness and meeting these other beings. So you go right ahead.
Well, I'm thinking of the various levels. You're going to have Russ on, and I'm sure you're going to talk about the Black Awakening. When I look at biblical eschatology, I see things maybe a little bit different in that the final stage of the church age before the rapture, the church is going to pass through, I don't believe the Great Tribulation, but the church, since judgment begins with the household of God, the church is going to have to pass through some real cleansing and challenging times so that the bride will be without spot or wrinkle. And I think 1 Peter 2:12 refers that to the day of visitation. Russ will refer to that as the Black Awakening. What our listening audience needs to be aware of is that there is a clandestine plan to bring down the United States and any established order to establish a new world order under Antichrist. This has been in the planning for many, many years. Those that are the oligarchy of plutocrats, the elites, Lucifer is their god. They don't refer to him as Satan, and they walk with him closely, and they have a walking relationship with him, and they are rewarded greatly for their obedience to him. Their goal is to bring this world under a king who has a right to reign. This king has to have the right bloodline. They believe that this can be traced back to, the Merovingian and that kind of thing. They have the right to rule, and when that king comes on the scene through right bloodlines and the bringing together of the right combination of bloodlines, then he will rule the world. And that's what they're working for. And they believe that this is the hour and the opportunity that they can bring this plan to pass. Now, in your study that there's all kinds of ways in which this is happening. In the work that I'm doing, Dr. Stan, and of course Russ will be able to talk about this as well, is that how is this being brought to pass? In the most hidden way, these various agents and operatives are at all various levels and strata of our infrastructure and our social structure, and at the right time, they are ready to fulfill the plan to bring about this particular new world order. And, for me as a believer in Jesus Christ and as a pastor, I understand that God has a plan for the church in the end times. And that's what I'm excited about, Stan, is because those that know their God are going to come forth, and they are going to shine in such a way that God will have a counter move to the final move of Satan leading up to the final emergence of Antichrist.
Well, I think anybody who would like to check out what Doug is saying, you can go up on the Internet and type in Share International, The Emergence, or Maitreya, or certainly just a week ago today in the Money Market Division on the Internet of the Wall Street Journal, they announced that the new world leader would be coming sometime next year, or at least very, very soon. Sounds incredible. We got the article off of Constance Cumby's website. She'll be with us Tuesday evening. They're planning, and there really is another group out there, planning on bringing back this world leader very, very soon. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course the significant thing is that we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis, and most people, of course, look at what's going on from an economic point of view.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
There really is a supernatural power that can cure you, but this power, at least in the material that Joanna was working with, was not coming from God. It was coming from demonic forces. So pick the story up there.
Well, I just mentioned that as someone who was a dabbling in the occult powers. I think when it comes to that which is really at the higher levels of bringing in the New World Order, this is a whole different ballgame. Even the CIA operatives that I've worked with, in terms of the internal DID structure, that is the dissociative layering of the alternate personalities, this was more in the outer layer of the internal DID structure, and it was all designed to shield the deeper bloodlines. In working with this through the years, some of the deepest hidden areas are those people who are coming out of the royal families of Europe. And when you get down to this level of the identity, there's a heavy layering of generational ancestral principalities, and these entities are very different from the demonic realm. They don't go looking for pigs, you know, to enter when they're cast out. They are very different. They have their own light bodies, and these entities are the world rulers of this present darkness that Paul talked about in Ephesians chapter 6. He mentions the heavenlies five times in Ephesians, and Professor Harris mentioned that epuranois, where we have the usage of heavenlies in the book of Ephesians, could also be translated as heavenly spheres or spiritual dimensions. And so these dimensions actually exist, and they're beyond our ability to sense with our five senses, but they are more real, and they govern the reality of which our five senses experience every day. It is what's going on in the invisible realm that is the supernatural that governs all visible phenomenon. And God, of course, infinitely transcends evil. And if we're walking with God and in fellowship with Him, His plan in these last days, Dr. Stan, is very exciting, because what He has provided for believers is going to be greater than the best that Satan has done to thwart His plan in these last days.
You mentioned, of course, the relationship to the royal families of Europe. They often referred to as the Black Nobility. But are you suggesting that these people are related to the families, or that so much of this this evil is being promoted by the royal families of Europe?
Well, no, not all the people I worked with, but there are some that are direct descendants, and privately I can tell you specific instances, but I shouldn't do that on the air.
All right, fine. No, there's certain things you probably shouldn't. In fact, it's so interesting, because I was talking with a woman who was certainly related to the royal family of Spain, who was actually has this really psychic ability to communicate with these demonic forces.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the British royal family, the House of Windsor, they're all very much involved. I will say that. I think that, you know, we know that Prince Philip is really Germanic, and he's been reported by numerous people of being a very influential position of one of the kings of the earth that we see mentioned in the Bible in terms of an occult position. It's these people that are the inner circle of the royal family that have, they're vying to have a son who has the right to rule and reign as the Christ. So you have the Romanovs in Russia vying for their person to come to power. You have the ten-toed kingdom of the revived Roman Empire, and you have those European royalty vying to have a son to come forth, a scion to rule and reign. So we have spheres of competition going on, and these people purposely sire children and then hire people that were mentored by Dr. Mengele to create splitting in their children, so that the children carry on the ancestral inheritance, these higher level principalities, to be empowered to carry forward their plan to bring about their Christ. And so that's what they're about. They are dead set in bringing forth the person whom they call as their Christ. And we know from the Bible that this is Antichrist.
And of course, they call him the Christ.
They call him the Christ.
And of course, that would be, of course, Maitreya of the Buddhists, or the Krishna of the Indian. It certainly would be the Imam Mahdi that the Muslim waits for,
yes.
The Messiah that the Christian that the Jews wait for, or the Christ that Americans, I should say, Jesus Christ, we wait for. We certainly don't look for the Christ. And when you ever see that phrase, the Christ, you want to be very, very wary, because they're talking about something entirely different than the Jesus Christ that we worship. We'll be right back with our special guest this evening. this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, Doug, how do you go about approaching people who do have these dissociative personalities, the so-called split personalities that were popularized perhaps 20 or 30 years ago? How do you, as a dealing with these people, how do you begin to bring them, out of this morass that they're involved in psychologically?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, there are psychological components to this, but it's also important to understand something of the spiritual level and how things are layered on a spiritual level as well. Some well-meaning deliverance ministries will try to cast out an entity which is really a part of the person's humanity and do a lot of damage because they don't know what they're dealing with. But I started out in the mid-80s by just doing biblical counseling, like Dr. Neil Anderson and C. Fred Dickinson and these just biblical counseling. But I noticed there were some people that were not actually being resolved. And when I read Jim Friesen's book, Uncovering the Mystery of MPD in 1991, and shared that with some of the people that I was stuck with, they began to present in little child parts. And I said, well, how come I haven't met you before? And they just looked at me and says, because we didn't think you would believe us. And so once I gained the trust and began to move in that area, we began to, as I would become more educated and going to special seminars and postgraduate seminars that, most of the people go to that are already graduated in this field, I just availed myself to every possible way to educate myself. And of course, staying in the Word as much as you can in this field, in terms of understanding the spiritual nature, you learn from working with these people, Dr. Stan. You God just leads you step by step. There's a difference between alternate personalities and getting down to the actual core identity, the true birth person. And what I do is if I'm working with people in the beginning, I just have a series of questions I ask them if they come for help that help me determine how things are structured, to see how the defenses are set up internally, and then we begin to go to work and to bring forth those human parts that were structured to do various kinds of functions and decontaminate the system of its demonic attachments and try to identify those deeper level principalities that are invested of staying hidden and keeping that person as their slave and as a vessel to channel darkness into churches.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest this evening is Pastor Doug Riggs, and we're talking about his work with people who have dissociative personalities or multiple personalities or split personalities. They're all the same thing. There are people who, as a child, would have certainly abuse, a terrible, terrible abuse, and the only way that the child could deal with that was simply to split their personality so that they would have one personality that would have this terrible trauma, and the other one, of course, was the personality they would live with. So before we go on, Doug, would you like to get your webpage out or information in case people would like to get in touch with you?
I don't have a webpage, but what I could do is, if they have any questions, I don't know if we would establish something through your ministry if they want to get in touch. I could talk with you after that and see.
All right, fine. So if there are people out there who need to get in touch with Pastor Doug Riggs, why, of course, you can contact me and we'll work something out there, because Pastor Riggs, of course, works on this, and of course, this is his calling. The trouble is there are so many people in our society that have these problems. And then they wonder why, sometimes they just things go so terribly for them. Are there some people there who don't even realize they have this? This is a problem.
Oh, Dr. Stan, I've been doing this. Actually working with multiple since 1991, and the thousands of hours of seeing people go into areas of their life where the trauma has been. You cannot even describe the abreactions. That is, when they get in touch with these areas of torture and trauma and demonization, they're in anguish. They're on the floor. I mean, they can be screaming sometimes, you know, when you see the reality of this and God's healing, He's the source of this. But it's a process. There is no quick fix. And I think for Christians, you know, that's a problem because, you know, why doesn't Jesus just snap His fingers and bring healing and wholeness? I mean, when you look in the New Testament, you know, He cast out the legion. And, I've said in conferences, I said, you know, I wished I had a person who only had a legion, Dr. Stan, because that would be rather simple. Because whatever was happening in our Lord's time, it is far worse now. I mean, what the enemy has done now, and I think since the technocrats of Nazi Germany, goes way off the scale of a legion. I mean, these people can be so highly structured and demonized. So as we work with them and bring them more and more out of their past into the present and bring in healing and integration through our Lord Jesus Christ, they're amazing people. I mean, these are my heroes as far as I use that lightly. Jesus is the only hero, but in terms of those whom I esteem, because they've had the courage to face their past and to come out of this darkness to reveal the secrets with much with great cost and often abductions. And when you begin to work in this area, the demonic realm lets their handlers know, and they come after you. And they seek to reprogram and abuse, and they hunt you down. And I've been threatened many times. And
are you talking about physically threatened?
Oh yeah, I mean there's been. I mean if it wasn't for the Lord, I'd been gone a long time ago. Because when you go in and invade the enemy's kingdom and uncover those kinds of secrets, that creates a tremendous threat. And so I know that I'm here by the grace of God, and Psalm 91 is not just a psalm in the Bible. It is a reality. And many of the other psalms that describe God's protection and His care for His servants.
Well, as hard as it is for a lot of people to believe this sort of thing, there's so much evidence out there from many sources that we have come in contact with that I'm sure this is absolutely true. Now, are all of these demonically inspired? In other words, is there a spiritual element to all of the cases of dissociative personalities, or are some of them just a byproduct of parents who really were cruel and wanted to hurt their children?
Well, you have various levels of DID or multiple personality disorder. If it's a child that grows up in a dysfunctional family or an abusive family, they may split, and their internal dissociative system will be somewhat random. But when you have children born into cult families, and in the case where I've been working primarily with members of the royal family and descendants of the royal family, the abuse is carefully structured. There are specific rituals and types of torture done, which I won't mention on the phone, that are done so that at the time of the trauma and the resultant splitting, demons are conjured in. They are actually forced to call them in, and powers are brought into the person while they're being abused. That's why it's called trauma-based mind control. But it's during the trauma and the torture that is carefully structured. And it's the Nazi doctors have perfected this, and it's been passed on to a number of different people who are working in this area in the occult. And so it is Satan's way to infiltrate and to occupy and attach himself to a person. Now, I'm talking about believers. Now, that person's spirit that is joined to the Lord, they are saved, and that cannot be touched. But if they're believed, if they're believers, they can't be possessed. But in these fragmented areas of their soul, there can be these demonic attachments. They are attached. They are demonized, and there's a difference. I do not believe a Christian can be demon-possessed, but they can certainly be demonized. Now, everyone that I know of, that I've ever worked with, that is MPD, or as we call it now, DID, they have all had a tremendous contamination of the powers of darkness and infiltration in terms of attachments.
All right, so this is why I think that it's very, very difficult to approach this purely from a psychological point of view, and I really believe that there is a tremendous spiritual element to all of this, which is why if you were to have a counselor, you have to be sure they're a Christian counselor, because you start dabbling in this, and you're going to get under tremendous demonic attack, because they don't want to lose the victim, and they certainly want to attack the person who is trying to drive these demonic beings, these demonic spirits away. High telephone number. Do you want to take any calls?
That's up to you. I mean, if that's what you do, that's fine.
We'll just see if anybody out there has a question or comment. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment on this subject, because it is a very important subject, especially today, because I believe we're going to be moving into very difficult spiritual times. And I think the dominant forces working within our society today are not political or ideological, they're spiritual.
Yeah.
And until people understand that, why, of course, they're going to be totally incapable of taking a stand. And you take a stand without understanding the spiritual aspect of it, you'll be destroyed. And I've been at this for 46 years. And believe me, I've seen so many good people who really wanted to do something to make a better America and make a better world. And they've lost their family, they've lost everything, because, of course, they did not have the Lord's protection. And without the Lord's protection, you don't dare undertake what we undertake.
That's correct.
Well basically, Doug, are you finding more and more of this today? Certainly, are there other people doing it? Because, you know, at one time, there were a lot of people who were involved. And apparently, when the government, the CIA, the FBI, and the forces of darkness launched a counterattack, why an awful lot of people just dropped out.
Yes, that's correct. In fact, I have a friend in Florida, Dr. Bailey. He said that many have just burned out, and just through the assaults and the impact of all this have dropped out, so there's fewer and fewer that are working this.
Are there any good, really good books at all on this?
You know, there are so many different ways you can look at it. I know you're going to be talking to Russ on Monday, and he can talk with you about various ways in which this is done, and I could recommend many. But for me, for what I'm doing now at the level that I'm doing, to try to explain the spiritual dynamics, you would have to sit in with a session with someone and actually see it happen, because you have to see it, and it's quite incredible. But I'm sure there are some books out there that can give you kind of a basic overview of what you're dealing with. But, you know, to learn this, Dr. Stan, it has to be hands-on, and it takes time. And the church really doesn't want to deal with it. I mean, you know, they just want to say, well, this can't be, or they want to go into denial that this kind of level of evil is even there. Or if God's sovereign, you know, we just trust in the sovereignty of God. Well, I do too, or I wouldn't be here. But you have to deal with reality. And, you know, if the enemy is bigger than what you thought, and if you go into this area of work, he will be a lot bigger than you ever imagined. And that just means that our God box has to grow.
Amen to that. Well, let's go to Sarah, who's calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Sarah. Do you have a question or comment?
Hi. I've tried to find help through different ways. I've always had a difficult time going to the church or any kind of what the world offers for their psychology type of help. I didn't hear your whole program, but while I was listening, I started to get. I feel real strange right now. I started to get really nauseous, and
have you had psychiatric problems? What sort of problems do you have, Sarah?
Well, I have problems of not being able to remember very much from when I was young, a young child. But I've had people tell me that they think I change a lot.
All right, fine. Do you have any? Let me talk to our guest here, Pastor Doug Riggs. Do you have any thoughts at all,
yes,
Doug?
Sarah, you know, you do. You know, I've I'm familiar with these kinds of symptoms and lack of childhood memory, and maybe the nausea could be something that you need to have somebody help you facilitate seeing what that's about. But you might check with Elijah House in your area. I think that may be in Sandpoint, Idaho. You just go online and look up Elijah House, and just ask the Lord about a good counselor that could help you. I think there may be Sandra Skinner Young that's in that area. She would be very good, and she would help you understand what's going on. But I do think that you need to get, from what you just shared, and I don't want to ask questions because it could draw you out in some areas, but from what you, the little bit you shared, I think it would be good to check with Elijah House and just...
They're all Christian.
Yes, they are.
Okay, and, Sarah, will you do that and then give us a call back afterwards, okay?
Yes.
Thanks so
okay,
much.
Okay, I will. Thank
Thanks
you.
So much.
And I'll pray for you, Sarah, and thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment?
A question. I hope it's not too far afield. We were subjected nationally to trauma-based programming September 11, 2001, the trauma being the planes hitting the towers and all the death and the events of those days.
Of course, the buildings coming down, one thing to see the planes hitting the buildings, but then, of course, to see the buildings coming down and realizing, of course, that thousands of people died. So it really was a traumatic episode. What was your point, Mike?
Well, let me just finish out the thought. They showed us those planes again and again and again for days and weeks. And but in between showing us the planes and all the deaths, they told us America has changed forever, and they alternated back and forth between messages that they wanted us to believe and the traumatic scenes. And the third component of this is that the perpetrators of it all emerged as our protectors. They said, okay, we're going to protect you from these horrible people. So I wondered if your guest has thought about any of that and what he might have to say.
Of course, one of the things I would just comment on, of course, we were told that this was the Arabs, and they actually had these pictures of the little children out in the street celebrating. We don't know what they were celebrating, but they showed those pictures over and over again. Obviously, it is the wicked Arabs who are Muslims who are behind what had happened. But what are your thoughts, Doug, about what Mike was asking? Is this an example of mind control?
I don't necessarily think it was mind control. I think that what it was a national traumatic event, and especially people who were there on the scene would probably have to deal with certain elements of post-traumatic stress as adults. And if you would take that kind of trauma of people there in that situation and have children subjected to that kind of thing and worse over and over and over again in early childhood, that would produce splitting. When you have adults subjected to that, they experience post-traumatic stress disorder, and they have to have, you know, some specialized counseling and ministry to work through that. So I would just say that was a national traumatic event that is an acute thing, and it doesn't represent the kind of chronic trauma that produces multiple personality disorder or dissociative identity disorder.
And this usually has to occur in a child, doesn't it? Doesn't it occur in
a... Absolutely.
And so this is an entirely different situation,
yes.
Doug, than Mike, I should say.
Yes.
Entirely different situation than what we experienced on September 11th. That was an example of manipulation. But it was an exam. It would not create this problem, at least.
No, it would not.
Yeah,
well,
I understand that part.
Okay, well, anything else, Mike, before we let you...
No, that's not. Thanks
God
a lot.
Bless. Thanks
Good
so much,
Thank you,
of course. This is a subject, of course, which a lot of people don't want to face. I mean, they don't want to believe this sort of thing can really go on today. And yet, unfortunately, it does go on today. And there are really, of course, been a conscious effort to cover this up using television, the story of the pretender, certainly the idea of the Manchurian candidate. I believe that they really can produce Manchurian candidates, but that's an entirely different picture than this childhood ritual satanic abuse, or at least abuse which leads to these dissociative personalities in adult life. And how often do you find somebody who's an adult who's a victim of this? You know, they had no idea what this was about until you begin to probe.
Well, I don't really ever probe. I mean, usually people come for counseling or in the professional area, they have depression or they have various relational problems, and they go in. And if they have a chronic abuse history in childhood and a dissociative history, and the therapist can identify it, not all of them are able to do this, and if they're able to work with it and have experience, then they can begin to help that person reconnect with their past and actually reclaim these different parts of their lives that are trapped in these traumatic events. And often this entrapment is enhanced demonically. Then they can move through the therapeutic process. But most people, they don't even begin to have memories or breakdown until the latter 20s or early 30s. And if they don't get help between 30 and 50, the likelihood that they would begin the process diminishes. So there's that spectrum when the defenses begin to break down and the hidden areas of dissociation trauma begin to come forward. It will usually present in terms of depression in women, often uncontrolled anger in men, and then they need to have the kind of people that can help facilitate and get them through this to get their life in order.
Hold that thought. Well, we've got Barbara on the line here. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Actually a comment. The one thing that...
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt, that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Personally, and her daughter, who I won't mention, but I think she was living in Hawaii at the time, and we had several conversations. In fact, it was Ted Gunderson, who was the former director of FBI in Los Angeles. He had 700 officers under him. I met Ted Gunderson. He worked with her for quite some time, And I have a quote here from her. I don't know if it'll be time to read it, but did you have a reason? Did you want to? Did the caller want to ask something about Bryce or?
No, I just because I had done a little reading in this subject myself, and so I haven't read her book, but I do know about it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling, Robin. Yes, there are so many people out there, and a few of them have written books, fascinating books, and we carry a book by Kathy O'Brien called The Transformation of America, which is one of the most horrible books, really, of course. It's an amazing story. But I know Kathy personally, and I'm firmly convinced her story is true.
Oh, yeah, I believe that.
Thanks very much, Robin. Appreciate it. Okay. Well, look, we're out of time, Pastor Riggs, but we'll certainly want to get you on our other programs as well, so I hope I can call you, and we'll get you scheduled. I think it's an important subject, especially now.
All right, thank you.
God bless.
Yes,
bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, this is amazing material. We actually carry the book, The Transformation of America. We actually carry a number of books. One of them is called The CIA Doctors. It used to be called Operation Bluebird. It was written by Dr. Colin Ross, and he treats these people, these victims of trauma-based mind control. We have a DVD called A Monarch. And then we have a four-tape set called The Aquarian Conspiracy. In my interviews with Constance Cumby, a DVD with Constance talking about the emergence. And what's the emergence? That is the planned emergence of this one world leader. And certainly there's nobody who knows more about this than Constance. If you like books, we carry the book, of course, Hostage to the Devil. And it's a book that changed my perspective back in about 1980 when I found this in a bookstore over in Hawaii, and it is the story of five exorcisms recorded by Father Malachi Martin, a Jesuit priest. And, of course, they're all exorcisms were documented by the Catholic Church. It's a book that helped to change my life, my perspective. Hostage to the Devil, we recommend people want to get that. They get it with my four-tape set of my interviews with Pastor Father Malachi. Only one of them really deals with the occult, but the rest of them deal with contemporary problems within Christianity. And then, of course, we carry the book The Beautiful Side of Evil by Joanna Michelson. That's The Beautiful Side of Evil. Pastor Doug had actually mentioned that book. And then, of course, we have a CD, the talk that Joanna Michelson gave at our conference on the 26th of October of this year. And so you can get the CD by itself. You can get all the CDs of all of the talks we have. Now they're all available. And then, of course, the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, or you can get my two-hour interview with Joanna Michelson and two other hours on the occult movement in a four-tape set called The Supernatural. And then, of course, as far as this idea of trauma-based mind control, we have an interview with Colin Ross, who deals with these problems, and it is in our four-tape set on Operation Paperclip. The program, which... Totally. I mean, they never mention this. They don't teach in schools. But Operation Paperclip was a CIA operation to bring Nazi war criminals to America, not only to work on the space shuttle, the space program, but also to work on mind control and on creating terrible new diseases. And they did. In fact, we have a great DVD with Dr. Garth Nicholson called Terrible New Diseases. And those diseases are there. And the tragedy is so many people are ill today, and nobody can figure out why. Well, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We really are involved in a spiritual battle. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend William Grigg. And William was formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine. Today, of course, he works maintaining the blog site for the Wealth Society, writing books and articles, and of course, raising his five children. And certainly, but he's good enough to come on with us a couple of times a week to share his analysis of what's going on today. And ladies and gentlemen, we are living at one of the most significant times in history. And, of course, we've been anticipating this was going to happen for 46 years that I've been observing what's going on. And now we see the systematic and, I believe, planned and orchestrated destruction of the financial structure of our nation. And they're doing a great job of this. And more people are getting out of jobs. More and more people face losing their homes. We're seeing the economic destruction of the entire world, and what we see as the underlying force behind this. We hear, I catch glimpses of this from time to time. The editor of the Financial Times has written an article recently about how, well, we're just going to have more in the way of global government, of world government, and the world government is upon us. Council on Foreign Relations came out with a press release this week talking about how we're just going to have to accept more global control over the economy. And it's all, this whole thing is beautifully, exquisitely designed to bring about a new world order, a new world financial system, a new world monetary unit of currency, a new world religion, and ultimately the new world leader. Well, with that as a background, William Grigg, thanks so very much for being with us.
Joy to be with you this evening.
All right, fine. Well, what are we going to talk about?
Well, of course, you set the table very elegantly, as you always do, and we have to deal with the financial end of things. But once again, I think it's so important that you never let us forget that there is a spiritual struggle at the root of what's going on right now. There are a lot of people of the positivist persuasion who don't believe in anything they cannot touch or smell or taste or feel in a tactile sense. And people of that sort puzzle me, because they do appreciate and crave a concept that is abstract called liberty, a concept that is also known as freedom. The larger issue is freedom, of course. Liberty, of course, is, a subset of this larger concept called freedom. That's not really something that you can palpably experience. You can experience the very palpable sense of what tyranny is like, as you're on the receiving end of coercion and unjust privations. But freedom is something that's more a state of mind or a state of soul than anything else. And so people of a positivist persuasion don't embrace the idea that we're dealing with a spiritual struggle, spiritual being something that is in the realm of metaphysics, something that is beyond the physical. But when you talk about the prospect of all these political developments and the doings of the economic realm leading to the establishment of a one-world religion, what I believe we're talking about actually is the final restoration of the oldest religion, which is a political religion, the worship of the state as God, or it's the worship of emancipated human appetites that is done sacramentally around the prospect of the state that rules us being worshipped as God, and those who are the managers of the state being worshipped as if they were deified in some sense. And you can
hold that thought. We're going to have to bring our other stations away for a moment, and then we'll be right back here with William Grigg, looking at what's really going on today. William, go ahead, pick the story up.
You can certainly see in a lot of what goes on in politics this orchestrated awe that is used to get people to genuflect or to prostrate themselves in front of political officials as if by virtue of being given on a temporary basis the ability to coerce others or even summarily to execute other human beings somehow elevates those people above the common mass of humanity and makes them into creatures that are exalted and divine. And with the impending advent of Barack Obama, of course, everybody is, well, not everybody, but many people who are observers of this believe that we're seeing the advent of a politician who's sort of wreathed in this manufactured sense of almost messianic splendor. And there's certainly a lot of that with respect to Mr. Obama, but there was quite a bit of that with respect to Mr. Bush. And really the first president that we had that went out of his way, or rather whose handlers went out of the way, to try to give him this aura of near divinity was Woodrow Wilson. Just today I was reviewing descriptions of Woodrow Wilson's trip to Europe after World War I. When he got off the ship, he had to take a long train trip to go to the Versailles Conference, and he had to travel across Italy. And there were accounts, I believe, in Thomas Fleming's book on Woodrow Wilson's war. There are accounts of how these peasants in the Italian countryside would gather for hours in advance of Woodrow Wilson's train's scheduled passage through their village, and they would genuflect before his train and cross themselves and prostrate themselves as if they were dealing with somebody who was not merely saintly but divine. And I think that really there's been this type of idolatrous sentimentality that has been a pretty standard part of our political culture for a long, long time. It's very disturbing. It's something that no Christian can countenance. But it's something that sort of prefigures this advent of a world leader who would be not only the paramount political figure, but in some sense a figure who would receive some kind of religious worship. And if you go back and read in the accounts of ancient Babylon and the founding of that semi-mythical kingdom, you can read about Nimrod in the Bible. You can also read about Nimrod in secular sources, such as Oriental Heritage by Will and Ariel Durant. Actually, it's just Will Durant. Ariel Durant wasn't his co-author at the time. But the founding of Babylon was based, according to Flavius Josephus, the ancient Jewish historian, on the idea that Nimrod wanted to create a system of government where all men would be dependent upon him and those other administrators of his government, and he would be able to use this as a way of alienating their allegiance to God.
And hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with all of our stations aboard. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Grigg. And William, go right ahead. But William was just saying that, of course, that there are those, of course, would replace the worship of the God of the Bible with the worship of the state. And mm-hmm. we're moving very, very rapidly towards that end, where there's almost, well, right now, of course, the most popular figure in the United States today is Mr. Obama, who's coming in, you know, with this promise of change, transformation of society. And the adoration on large segments of our society for Mr. Obama is really unparalleled at any time I can think of, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years. So go right ahead with the story.
I know, it's really quite remarkable, and I think thoroughly unsavory, but once again, you take a look at the way that the ancient societies that are sort of the prefiguration of what historians used to refer to as Oriental despotism. They used to juxtapose or contrast, rather, Oriental despotism with Western enlightenment about the limitations on government power. And they'd always talk about, for instance, ancient Babylon and the Persian Empire. And, of course, between that, of course, you had the Assyrians and a number of other societies that were very, very tyrannical. And the idea was that whether you're talking about Nimrod and Babylon, whether you're talking about the Egypt of the pharaohs, that common men were treated as cattle, and the rulers were treated as if they were gods on earth. That's, of course, true when you read about ancient Persia and the so-called King of Kings. Whether you're talking about Cyrus or Xerxes or Artaxerxes or any of the Persian rulers, they're always treated as if they were literally the highest and most exalted figures in humanity by virtue of the fact that they commanded the machinery of oppression and coercion, and their whims could be expressed in the summary execution of people who were supposedly lesser than they were. Now, that's really where this whole idea comes from, and it's completely foreign to the Western way of thinking, but it has made vast inroads in our thought at about the same time that the American experiment in republican government got underway in the late 18th century. There arose in the French Revolution a very different philosophy that was marketed as being of the same, of the same material substance as the American Revolution. The French Revolution was actually diametrically opposed to the American Revolution. And the American Revolution is based on the idea of restoring the ancient rights of individuals as recognized in Anglo-Saxon law going back to 1215 and the Magna Carta. And the French Revolution was supposedly going to be a radical break with the past and the introduction of this new philosophy of government. And it was supposedly something new and untested. But Arnold Toynbee, the noted 20th century historian in his work on the French Revolution, pointed out that rather than being something new, the French Revolution actually brought about what could be called, what he called the restoration of this ancient concept of government that you can read about when you read the histories of ancient Oriental despotisms. And what Toynbee called it was the worship of collective human power. And, of course, the collective is represented by some dear leader or some figurehead who represents a ruling oligarchy. But the idea is that there's something about humanity and the collective that empowers a government with a superior moral standing to those who are governed, which, once again, is completely opposite to the American point of view, which is that individual human beings being created in the image of God receive their rights from God, and they organize themselves, individual human beings, for the purpose of creating governments and conferring upon those governments certain limited and qualified powers that are revocable, and that when those powers are used by government for purposes not conducive to protecting the God-given rights of the people, then that government should be done away with instituted.
I really think, of course, the primary difference between the American Revolution and the French Revolution, I mean, both of them looked at the despotic nature of government, but of course in the American Revolution, this was a Protestant revolution. It was aimed upon, maintaining the Protestant ethic here in the United States and man's dependence upon God. The French Revolution was intent upon destroying God, destroying the Catholic Church, seizing the Catholic Church as, property, and rather than a society where men would be dependent upon God, would be just and righteous because they were ruled primarily by God rather than by government, in France they tried to create a utopian society without God, without any moral foundation, and of course within a relatively few years they had another dictator and his name was Napoleon Bonaparte. Mm-hmm. You cannot have a society, an atheistic society, and maintain freedom. That's the difference. You can only have an a society where men can be free because they're ruled by God, because those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants.
Yeah, that's certainly true. the really interesting thing I find about the French Revolution, the studies I've made of it, and bear in mind, of course, that that's something you could easily spend a lifetime studying and only scratch the surface of that eruption of pure barbarism and evil that was the French Revolution and the consequences it's had for the world. The thing I find really interesting is the fact that originally they wanted to do away entirely with every vestige of Christian civilization, and you correctly talk about the fact that the government would seize the property of the churches, the Catholic parishes and the Catholic communities. They destroyed the Catholic educational system, and they sought to restart the calendar to do away with the Christian calendar because, of course, time was cleft in half by the advent of Jesus Christ, and now we reckon our years and our days are all numbered with reference to that event. So they wanted to do away with that in the calendar, and they created a calendar that was based on nature and on the seasons. But they found that it was necessary in order to hold society together and in order to create some kind of cohesion in this society they were creating, they had to have some kind of a religious cultus. Cultus, of course, is where the word culture comes from. Some kind of collective or communal act of worship rooted in a shared understanding of something that transcended the physical. And so, of course, they enshrined a prostitute in the Cathedral of Notre Dame, called her the goddess of reason, and that, of course, was to be the original template that they were going to follow as a religious understanding that would hold the society together. And then later they created, I may be getting the chronology mixed up here, but they did it in addition to trying to institutionalize the worship of reason as incarnated in a prostitute, they created another format for worship where they were worshiping an unspecified supreme being. But the actual focus of worship, and this goes all the way back to Nimrod in Babylonian antiquity, the actual focus of worship was the state itself. The state is administered by these people who are presiding over this war against Christian civilization in France. Of course, France was the first daughter of the Catholic Church, and when you had this hideous eruption of violence take place in France, it focused primarily, of course, on the visible church, on those who were the clergy, and in the early 1790s, of course, one of the first things that the revolutionary regime in France did was it initiated a procedure where the clergy had to swear an oath to uphold the state and to recognize the state, the revolutionary government that was moved from Versailles to Paris, as really the source of their authority, rather than Rome and the Pope. And for a Roman Catholic, of course, that's completely unacceptable. And so there were non-juring priests who decided not to take the oath, and they were subject to summary execution. They would have been beheaded, and they were beheaded by the dozens and hundreds when they were found. But in 1793, in April of that year, there was an outbreak of resistance in Lavanda. It's also pronounced Vendée, which is a valley defined by a river, the Vendée being a river. The Vendeans were traditional Catholics who had non-juring priests rather than those who took the oath of the clergy, the civil oath of clergy, as the people who presided over their worship. They did not send their kids to the government schools. They preferred to set up little religious institutions where their children would be educated or educate them at home. But what really set them off was the fact that the government in Paris was sending out press gangs to conscript their youth to go and join the Revolutionary Army to export the revolution to Austria. They go fight to other Catholics on behalf of this atheist regime. And that created a civil war within the revolution that was to last about 6 years and claim hundreds of thousands of lives, most of them perfectly innocent civilians who were rounded up by imported mercenary troops under the likes of General Westermann, who was a perfectly horrible Prussian commander. And they would go into the countryside, gather up these defenseless Vendeans, drown them in the Loire River, or otherwise put them to death in perfectly horrible ways. You know, like I said, something on the order of between 150 and 200,000 people were killed in the Vendean uprising. But that's a really good example of how this spiritual struggle we talk about has physical consequences. What these people were fighting for was this intangible but indispensable thing called freedom, in this case, the freedom to worship God according to the dictates of their conscience, according to their upbringing as Roman Catholics. Not just Roman Catholics who've had to put up with that type of nonsense either, of course. The descendants, the intellectual descendants of the Jacobin revolutionaries in France have been killing people, Christians of various persuasions, by the millions since that time, since the last decade, the last 2 years of the 18th century.
Let me just comment. We do carry two wonderful books on the French Revolution. One of them is Nestor Webster's book on titled The French Revolution. A very important book. The other is written by James H. Billington, who is the current Librarian of Congress, Fire in the Minds of Men, going into the secret societies that were working behind the scenes, promoting the French Revolution and a series of revolutions that culminated at the time this book was written, shortly before the book was written, that's the Cuban Revolution. And he traces all of these to secret societies. But, of course, behind this, of course, are powerful spiritual forces, which he doesn't get into. But the book is certainly one of the five most important books in my library, Fire in the Minds of Men. And, of course, Nestor Webster's wonderful book about the French Revolution and the influence of the Masons and the Jacobin secret societies at that time on bringing about this horrible, horrible carnage. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, these same forces are alive and well in America today. The secret societies that were there at the time of the French Revolution are here in the United States. And we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest this evening, William Grieg, as we analyze, of course, this history of revolutions and how this, of course, is so applicable today. Well, William, go right ahead.
Yeah, I love that book, Fire in the Minds of Men. for a number of reasons. You mentioned the fact that Dr. Billington is the current Librarian of Congress. He's held that post on a number of occasions. What's really interesting about the Library of Congress, and I have to take just a moment to make a brief digression here, within the last week or so, I listened to an interview with a fellow by the name of Yuri Maltsev, who is a Russian expatriate who teaches at a small college in Wisconsin called Carthage College. Fascinating man. He was raised in a Jewish family in the former Soviet Union. And, of course, most of the people in his family were medical doctors, and he considers himself to be sort of the black sheep because he went into economics rather than medicine. But when he was studying economics in the Soviet Union, he found that it was very difficult for him to have access to the text that he wanted to read. You could find, of course, anything that you wanted to in the way of the scribblings of Marx or the lunatic outpourings of Lenin or Stalin or other unreadable and completely useless expressions of Marxist orthodoxy, but you couldn't find the writings of Hayek or Mises or anybody who had anything good to say about economics, about how it really functions. You couldn't get Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson unless you signed up for a certain series of courses designed to defend Marxist orthodoxy against Western free market economics. And so Mr. Maltsev enlisted in that effort. He signed up for a number of courses there at the University of Marxism-Leninism there in Moscow, where he would have access to these very carefully guarded texts. And in order to have access to this special library, he had to sign a special application where he was granted a waiver, and he was told that he could read these books and check them out under very limited circumstances. But in order to have access to them, he had to go through a process where he'd go up to the library and an armed guard would be present, and he would be basically kept under severe and relentless scrutiny the whole time he was at this library reading those books that were prescribed by law in the former Soviet Union. And he said that it's really interesting because every time he's visited the Library of Congress since then, he's always been reminded of that experience, and the contrast was very, very instructive to him, that he was able to have access to the James Madison Library, which I guess is the formal name of the Library of Congress, to just about any book in the world. Until recently, and now that we're living under this homeland security state that in so many ways is a parallel of what they had to put up with in Soviet Russia, according to Dr. Maltsev, the procedure for going into the Library of Congress and reading a book is remarkably akin to the one that he had to undergo when he was in Moscow at the height, or the depth, rather, of Brezhnev's reign, trying to get his education in economics. He said, really, if you go to Library of Congress today, it's just like going to these classified and highly restricted libraries in the Soviet Union back in the 1970s. But Billington, as you pointed out, is the Librarian of Congress. He's also been, I don't know if he still is, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's been a fellow at the Aspen Institute. He's got something of a pedigree of the sort that I think would inoculate him against claims that he's a conspiracy nut on account of the fact that he belongs to a lot of these organizations that conspiracy nuts like myself point to as the visible elements of this partially submerged network of influence. But in his book, Billington does go into the pedigree and into the development of this covert mechanism of revolution that brought about the French Revolution and its descendants. He talks about how you had these offshoots of...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is talking about one of my favorite books. We do carry the book. It's called Fire in the Minds of Men. It's written by James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, where he goes into the background of the secret societies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Librarian of Congress writes about the secret societies that fomented the French Revolution in 1789, and then, of course, a series of revolutions that that rocked France after that, and the revolutions that certainly subsequently in Italy, and revolutions in Germany, and then culminating in the Russian Revolution in 1917, and fast-forwarding to the Cuban Revolution in 1959, all part of the same world revolutionary process. Now, remember, the book was written about 1966, somewhere somewhere in there. So that, but anyway, of course, the Cuban Revolution has just taken place. But these revolutions are still going on today. In fact, we have a wonderful DVD called World Revolution, where I interview Ambassador Smith, Earl Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution, telling how the American CIA and State Department actually brought Fidel Castro to power. Contrary to everything you've ever heard, we brought him to power, we've kept him in power. We can't let the common people understand that. A very important DVD, World Revolution. Pick the story up there, William.
Yep. The thing about the pedigree chart, if you will, that Dr. Billington traces in this book is that it does start with that very enigmatic organization or put together by Adam Weishaupt of the Illuminati, the Bavarian Illuminati, about which much has been said. There's been a great deal of nonsense said and written about it. There's been a great deal of bien pensant ridicule directed to those who think that the Illuminati was in some sense important. Well, among those who think that it was an important development in history was Mr. Billington, Dr. Billington. Same is true, by the way, of Will and Ariel Durant. If you take a look at the volumes from their history of civilization, Rousseau and Revolution and the Age of Voltaire and the Age of Napoleon, there's all kinds of material in those three books particularly about the Illuminati and its importance in world affairs and the fact that it was an engine of revolution in France and elsewhere in Europe. Rousseau and Revolution in particular has a great deal of very good information about it. But the Fire in the Minds of Men pedigree that's traced here talks about the conspiracy within the revolution that was fomented by Gracchus Babeuf and his followers and hangers-on, and how they really pioneered what would be considered now to be the doctrine and practice of the communist vanguard. And the Babeuf conspiracy did survive the turmoil and bloodshed of the French Revolution, and it was able to beget descendant groups that picked up basically the same tactics and organizational principles. And the other thing that I find really provocative about the account that's given by Billington is that he talks about some of the exposés that were written contemporaneously at the time that the revolution was going on. Of course, the two most notable ones are John Robison's Proofs of a Conspiracy, and the other one would be
Abbey Burrell's
History or Memoirs Illustrating the History of Jacobinism. And what Billington points out is that Burrell's book in particular is very long, very deep, well-resourced and footnoted study of this phenomenon, that Burrell was so accurate in reporting what had happened that a lot of these descendant groups of the Illuminati actually used some of Burrell's works as organizational manuals in order to carry out the conspiracy. He may have outsmarted himself, Abbot Burrell, by being so diligent in researching this, but really is an ironic testament to the accuracy of his scholarship. But these groups that included the descendants, the outliers of the Babeuf conspiracy, coalesced into a number of conspiratorial movements in Italy and in Germany and elsewhere on the continent, and also in Ireland, and they crossed the pond into Great Britain, and there were elements of it that reached as far as the United States. But the thing I find really interesting, once again, is the fact that there was this continuity of tactics and objectives and organizational approaches, and that when you had uprisings in 1830 and 1848, as Billington points out, they followed the same basic game plan, and they had the same objective, which was to overthrow established Christian civilization and Christian modes of organizing power and to replace them with this new order of politics that would consolidate power in a central location under the control of a revolutionary vanguard that would basically have no restrictions on the powers that it could exercise in the pursuit of this new society. And so I do think that Billington's book is indispensable, and the title of that book is particularly thought-provoking, where he talks about the fire in the minds of men. What he talks about this is, once again, what a revolutionary faith, the origins of the revolutionary faith, is the subtitle of that book. Again, it talks about this being a spiritual struggle. It's something that takes place in that mysterious realm that exists between the ears and in the hearts of men.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg and really talking about the origins of the World Revolution, which has been played to its completion today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, William Grigg, and go right ahead, William.
Fire in the minds of men is a phrase that Mr. Billington, who's a scholar of Russian language and literature, if I understand it correctly, got from Dostoevsky's novel, which has been translated, the title of which has been translated variously as The Possessed of the Devils. And it talks about a situation which a small town suddenly finds itself under siege by this group of nihilists, radical revolutionaries, who simply show up one day and decide that they're going to revolutionize this community. And Dostoevsky, at one point in his life, had been very deeply involved in some of these elements, the Young Russia movement, and some of the elements that were, if I remember correctly, related to the efforts of Bakunin and some of the other anarchists and nihilists to revolutionize Russia in the 19th century. So he knew from the inside what this was like, and is often reflected in a lot of his literature. The Possessed, that's the title I'll settle on. It's called The Possessed of the Devils. I'll call it The Possessed. And also Crime and Punishment, his most famous novel, both deal with the mindset of the revolutionary. But there's a scene in that novel where suddenly there are fires that are being, literal physical fires that are being propagated throughout the small village. And someone says, well, we need to put the fires out. You know, the fires are going to burn down these houses. And then one of the revolutionaries says, well, that will do you no good because the fire is not on the roofs, but the fires are in the minds of men. You know, we have now propagated our revolutionary gospel. We've evangelized people into the revolution, and you really can't stop it because if you put out the fire superficially, it'll still that spark or iskra, you know, that's the Russian term for spark. And it was also the name of Lenin's journal in his days as a newspaper man. His training was in law, but he became a newspaper man because he understood the control of the media, or that the use of the media, mass media, was necessary in order to propagate the message. But this spark, this iskra, was now being carried in the hearts of the revolutionaries. And so once again, you come back to the idea that this is, as you like to say, a religious or a spiritual struggle. But I thought it was really quite chilling in a way, ironically enough, that in his second inaugural address back in 2005, that George W. Bush, whoever it was who wrote this for him, put that trope, that we've ignited a fire in the minds of men, into the inaugural address for Mr. Bush's second term, and that Condoleezza Rice expatiated upon that expense.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William was simply pointing out that the title of Dostoevsky's book, pardon me, of James H. Billington's book, Fire in the Minds of Men, which I consider very important, and I'm pleased to know that, William feels it's important, and we do carry the book. You can get it through our ministry, and we suggest along with that the DVD World Revolution, which of course ties this all together with the talk, and then of course you can read the book and you'll understand the continuing revolution dating back of course really to the beginning of recorded time of Nimrod and this where the mystery religions began, and what we're seeing today is the fulfillment of the goal of the mystery religions, the establishment of a one world government. But anyway, certainly, before we go on, William, I'd like you to go ahead and get out your blog site, tell people how they can get in touch with your work.
I really appreciate that. The easiest way to find my writings is to go to willgrigg.com, and that is a gateway website, and a little content poor right now, but if you look at the upper right-hand corner of that blog, of that website, rather, there's a list of external links, and at the top of that list, you'll find a link to my blog, which is Pro Libertate. I like to refer to it as a daily blog, but I don't really have the time to write and publish anything on my blog every single day. I usually try to put out a new essay between 3 and 4 or 5 times a week. And the reason why it's not a daily blog is because when I'm writing new content for my blog, I'm trying to write essays that are between 1,200 and 2,500 words that would have the heft and substance of a magazine article. And I can usually put out maybe 2 or 3 articles of that length and level of detail in a given week. You may mention the fact, Dr. Stan, that my wife and I are raising five children. Our oldest is 11. We actually are expecting our sixth in February, and so we're busy doing other things, and because of the nature of our domestic circumstances here, I just really don't have the time, really, that I once had to be putting out something new every day. I do aspire to do that, and, you know, God willing, and if certain things work out, maybe I'll be able to go back to that kind of a schedule. But Pro Libertate provides those who go and check it out with something that I like to refer to as investigative polemicism. I'm an opinion writer. I don't disguise my opinions. I'm obsessively devoted to the protection of individual liberty. I refer to myself as a Christian libertarian or a Christian individualist. I believe that the highest political good is liberty, and I believe that the chief function of a government, to the extent that we can justify the existence of government, is to protect the innocent individual in the sanctity of his person and property. His most important person, of course, or most important property, rather, would be his physical person and the sovereignty of his individual will, to the extent that it doesn't injure the rights of others. And I believe that you can't fully understand what liberty is unless you understand that we are made in the image of God, that there is a creator who designed us in a certain way, and that he gave us a manual of instructions for the maintenance of our freedoms, for the maintenance of our persons, and for the proper operation of a society. And the manual of instructions, of course, are the Holy Scriptures, the New Testament in particular. The Sermon on the Mount, even more specifically, the two great commandments to get down to specific cases. If we were to live the two great commandments, really, most of our political problems would be solved because we would be living the highest and most important law. And, of course, Jesus said that on those two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. And so really, when you get down to the fundamental beliefs that inform Pro Libertate, it would be in the New Testament, the Sermon on the Mount, more specifically the two great commandments. And that's the perspective I use when I'm trying to evaluate political developments. And I write a lot, unfortunately, such is the nature of our society, about really conspicuous and telling examples where these great principles are being ignored by those who exercise power over others. And the other element of my worldview that is very, very important to understand as you read what I have to say is that I simply cannot stand bullies. I have a deep and visceral and unconquerable detestation of bullies. And people who gravitate toward political power, unfortunately, have the bullying impulse. Most of them are pathologically inclined toward bullying. Perhaps that's why they chose that line of work or that line of employment. I don't really want to call it honest work. But unfortunately, a lot of what I write about would fall into the category of official bullying. But it's not just anecdotal or isolated incidents that I write about. All these things have resonances and connections to larger issues that affect all of us, particularly now as our financial collapse is taking on the characteristics of a black hole and something from which not even light can escape, and as we see the government that's ruling us becoming more overtly authoritarian and militarized, when there are rumblings, discernible, irrefutable rumblings now of the imposition of outright martial law in the event that our financial collapse begets widespread social confusion. These things are staring us right in the face, and we have to understand how we got here and what we need to do in order to reconstruct society in a more sane and liberty-friendly way. And that's some of what I'm trying to accomplish through Pro Libertate. I also, as you mentioned, am connected with the Welch Foundation, and the Welch Foundation published my most recent book, which is called Liberty at Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. It's available through Radio Liberty. It's also available through my blog, Pro Libertate. Every essay I publish at the end has a link that people can follow to buy my book from Amazon.com. And I'm also trying to finish another book, the tentative title of which is Cry Defiance. And it's about, once again, the subject of individual liberty. It's more in the nature of a collection of essays that I've written that all deal with these subjects. And it will also include some suggestions as to what we can do amid this horrific financial and societal upheaval to try to teach and rehabilitate the principles of individual liberty. And I am optimistic. This is something that you and I have talked about quite a bit, Dr. Stan. I am optimistic precisely because the system we've been living under is unsustainable. It's unjust. It represents a corruption of the finest political system that had ever existed, ever been struck off by the mind of man, to paraphrase Blackstone. The Constitution and the Republican framework we were given were a real blessing to us and to humanity. And what we're living with right now is by no means a constitutional republic. We've not been a constitutional republic in anything but dishonest and hypocritical name for a number of decades now. And the system we're living under simply cannot sustain itself. All it can do, of course, is continue to propagate inefficiency, corruption, misery, bad priorities, materialism. And what I think is that when the distractions of this facile, debt-fueled consumer society is stripped away from us, we'll have an ironic opportunity to reconstruct society on a sound basis. It'll be painful. I'm not looking forward to it at all. I've been through a couple of economic upheavals. The most recent one that really had a bite into my lifestyle was in the late 70s, early 80s, and of course you remember that very well, I'm sure. This one's going to be much, much worse. But it's the sort of thing we're going to have to go through if we're going to have any reasonable prospect of recovering that which has been taken from us.
I certainly agree with you, and I think we're in for some very, very difficult times. Of course, the best thing that we could do right now would be to quit doing anything and just to let the whole system collapse and then start to rebuild again. Because, of course, of what they're doing today by pouring in, well, certainly within a 75-day period, they increased the currency about 80%. The most phenomenal increase in the currency in the history of modern man, certainly, and this is a prelude to hyperinflation, which will wipe out everybody. The last thing you want to do is destroy the currency, and they seem intent upon doing that. So anyway, it's going to be difficult times, and for those out there in the listening audience, prepare for the destruction of the value of our currency, because believe me, there is no better way to destroy a nation than to destroy their currency, and they seem intent upon doing that.
Well, that, once again, is something right out of the Revolutionary Playbook. You can take a look at the French Revolution and the generation of completely spurious currency, the assignats, which were issued, if I remember correctly how this worked, they were basically a currency that was originally based on fractional reserves backed by seized church properties. They went in and they seized the great estates and the churches and the parishes. And then on the basis of the value of the real estate that had been seized by force by the government, they began to issue what were essentially these circulatable bonds. These bonds or surety notes that were backed by the church properties. But then they, of course, began to issue fractional notes based on tiny fractions and then subdivide it, and they would multiply it using the same kind of alchemical formula that's being used by modern finance in order to magnify the subjective value of the currency, well out of proportion to the actual value of the properties that supposedly backed it. Edmund Burke, in his Reflections on the Revolution in France, has a long discussion of this. And when I read that book way back, more than half my life ago, I kept asking myself, why on earth is Edmund Burke spending so much time talking about these abstruse matters of finance in the French Revolution? I mean, wasn't he talking about all the lurid stuff involving the beheadings and the oppression of Christians and so forth? I mean, the red meat stuff that I want to read about. Well, Burke, the Irish-British statesman, who was a friend of the American Revolution, by the way, in the sense that he recognized the legitimacy of the colonial patriots' grievances, he went into the detail that he did in discussing the financial situation in France precisely because he understood this principle, that inflation is actually the most effective way of completely strip-mining a society of civility and rendering it utterly barbarous.
In fact, we don't carry Edmund Burke's book, but we do carry another book by Andrew Dickinson White called fiat money inflation in France, which tells the story of what happened immediately after the revolution when they decided to simply print a paper currency backed by the value of the property that had been seized from the nobility and from the Catholic Church. And fiat money inflation in France, when you read that book, it's like reading Deja Vu all over again. You remember that one, don't you?
Yes. The thing about what's going on right now, of course, is that we put ourselves in this position because there has been this entente between Wall Street and the Federal Reserve and also the military-industrial complex, the engine of our imperial foreign policy, which has not been about promoting freedom. That's the thing that conservatism of the Bush era variety has misrepresented for public consumption, and I think that's the biggest delinquency or the biggest cultivated falsehood of Bush era conservatism is the idea that our foreign policy, which by now is one of unabashed imperialism, has anything to do with promoting freedom as the Constitution defines freedom. Just, I believe it was yesterday, Laura Bush was making the claim that George W. Bush had liberated 51 million people. Well, if she's talking about Afghanistan, Afghanistan is groaning beneath the same Stone Age variety of Islamic obscurantism that existed in 2001. Basically, Afghanistan is just as badly off now as it was before the invasion of late 2001. She's talking about Iraq. Iraq has a constitution that establishes Sharia law as the law of the land. They're under the shadow and the palpable influence of Iran, which is a revolutionary government that defines itself as a fundamentalist Shiite religious society for public for consumption at home, but has a revolutionary foreign policy with respect to the near abroad. So it's difficult to say that either Iraq or Afghanistan would be considered to be liberated. But this was the grand conceit unveiled in 2005 in the second inaugural address of Bush and also in some of the speeches of Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State, the all-but-forgotten Secretary of State. They both invoked this phrase, fire in the minds of men, to describe what the foreign policy of the Bush administration was going to be about. It was going to be a revolutionary foreign policy. They were going to go about the world propagating democracy, you know, not the order, liberty of a constitutional republic, which, of course, is something you cannot propagate at sword point, but rather they were going to be spreading revolutionary democracy throughout the world. Well, that's a very good way, of course, to tear societies apart, create enemies by the tens of millions, to create corpses by the millions. And so we've had a supposedly conservative Republican administration over the last 8 years doing everything it can do to carry out this foreign policy, which actually partakes more of the attitudes of Trotskyite Marxist evangelism than it does of the classic American foreign policy of Washington and Jefferson and John Quincy Adams, you know, in which the objective of foreign policy was to cultivate friendship where we could, but to protect our interests by avoiding entanglements with foreign countries, by staying out of the domestic affairs of other countries, by trying to engage in honest commerce, mutually beneficial, genuine commerce with people of goodwill, and to protect our own frontiers and to protect our own legitimate interests as a commercial nation rather than going about as a colossus seeking to impose political systems on recalcitrant countries and cultures. And if that swaggering, arrogant, vaunting, self-enraptured conceit of a foreign policy coupled with the fiat currency and the inflation and debt-based monetary system that we've been cursed with now, that are leading us to this grand climacteric in our history where our financial system is in incurable decline. As I've said before, this is the extinction-level event for the dollar system. There's just no way we're going to get out of this without the dollar losing its status as the world's reserve currency. That status was a result of the Bretton Woods Agreement of 1944 and then the revised Bretton Woods II of 1971, where we decoupled from the gold standard. And that, of course, was supplemented, as I've said before, by the petrodollar accord with the Saudis, where because the Saudis and OPEC were willing to take the dollar in exchange for oil, the dollar had some subjective value. And now we're finding that that system simply cannot support itself. We've gotten to a point where half of this year's gross domestic product is pledged to the bailout. Within a couple of years, the amount of public debt of our government is going to surpass our gross domestic product. That's called unmistakable, irrefutable bankruptcy.
So it's actually, of course, we are our bankrupt nation today,
yeah,
with a debt that's hovering around $60 trillion, but they're lying to the people about their statistics. Let me just point out that Sir Dave Williams has been talking about fire in the minds of men, talking about George Bush's use of that phrase in his second inaugural address. We have a talk, it's called Fire, it's called Forbidden Secret, and with that comes a syllabus which contains that speech by George Bush. And why was he using in his second inaugural address the term fire in the minds of men? Well, we explain it in this talk. William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, first of all, Dr. Stan, I certainly hope that you and your family have a blessed Christmas next week. We're not going to have a chance to speak again before we celebrate the birth of our Lord. And I do hope that those in our listening audience will also have time to reflect upon the singular blessing that we commemorate by way of custom every December. And in pondering the predicament that we're in right now, I find myself once again reflecting on the fact that the only way we can be truly free is if we understand where it is that we come from and where our liberties ultimately come from as well. We have to understand that we're not the result of some kind of a chance mutation in the primordial slime pit. We're not just matter in motion. That there is a benevolent, all-powerful creator who had ordained our existence and given it purpose and given it direction. And it was he who ordained that we would be free. It was he who designed the human personality to have a unique hatred of captivity and a unique hatred of coercion and a unique sense of rebelliousness against the presumption of others to define how the individual will live. I mean, this is something that is inscribed indelibly in the history of every human society. There is something within us that simply will not put up with being tyrannized. And I think that as we find ourselves losing our purchase upon the comforting illusions of this debt-based consumer culture, the more of us are going to be driven to our knees by adversity. And in that posture, we can really find the true source of strength and comfort that we've ignored in the times of delusionary prosperity, as we're driven to recognize that we as individuals and as a nation have to repent, and that the God before whom we'll make those supplications, those petitions, is eager for us to repent, because he's eager to bless us. And my favorite passage in the Old Testament, Ezekiel chapter 18, the Lord says, "Have I any pleasure at all that the wicked should die, and not that he should turn from his sins and live?" That's the nature of the Lord who was revealed 2,000 years ago in that humble stable. And it's an immense blessing to know that whatever happens in our economy and our politics, he is there, and he will always be there for us.
Amen to that. Well, our guest this evening has been William Grigg, and certainly we hope you've enjoyed it. And William, certainly Barbara and I want to wish you and your family a wonderful and joyous Christmas as well.
Thank you so much.
Constantly remember that, of course, the reason for the season, Jesus Christ is the reason for the season. So
amen.
Thank you for being with us. We'll look forward to talking to you. I hope we can get you on a week from tonight, and we'll go from there. Good night, and God bless. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope that you've enjoyed our interviews with William Grigg. We certainly always look forward to having William with us as a guest. He's certainly one of the most articulate
spokesmen
and certainly on the conservative scene, and we're indeed fortunate to have him with us. Well, certainly I want you to know we do carry some of the books we talked about. We carry, of course, William's book, Liberty and Eclipse. We carry the book by James H. Billington, Fire in the Minds of Men. And going along with that, we strongly suggest my talk on, it's a DVD, it's called World Revolution. There you'll see my interview with Ambassador Smith, American Ambassador to Cuba, at the time of the Cuban Revolution, telling how we brought Fidel Castro to power. Of course, we have kept him in power ever since then. But we can't let the American people know that. My goodness, they might begin realizing that most of the things going on have nothing to do with what they appear to be. Well, we carry Nesta Webster's wonderful book. It's called simply The French Revolution. It's the classic book on the French Revolution and the part that the secret societies played in that and that they certainly play in the world today. And then, of course, we have my talk on the Forbidden Secret, which we strongly recommend. It will give you tremendous insight into what's going on, and without a syllabus. It's called The Forbidden Secret. And there, of course, you'll read George H. Bush's first inaugural address and his second inaugural address. His first inaugural address, where he talks about the angel who rides in the whirlwind and addresses this and directs this storm. He uses the term twice. The angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. And the second one, of course, he talks about the ancient plan that has always been here. And, of course, he talks about the fire in the minds of men. And when you understand what he's talking about, it's so obvious that, of course, we are using America's military and financial might to bring about the new one world order and the one world religion. And then, of course, we also have the book Fiat Money, Inflation in France. If you'd like one of our catalogs, we'd be glad to get it for you. Do not have the Berkey water filters, why we carry both the big Berkey and the Berkey light water filters, and you need to begin preparing for the difficult times that lie ahead. If you'd like a catalog on, or at least the list of the foods that you'd want to have, the long-term storage foods, you'd like information on the Berkey water filters. If you would like, of course, you get a list of the health products that Barbara and I take, and you want to have these things on hand. Alibi is something I really use, especially during the wintertime, so I can be here every night. I don't have anybody to spell for me, and we've not missed a program since, well, other than when I had my heart surgery, we haven't missed a program because of illness for a good long while. And, of course, vitamin D, large doses of vitamin D and antibiotics seem to increase the immune response, and they certainly helped us to avoid the flu. And the last thing you want to do is, of course, take any influenza vaccines, unless, of course, you really want to get sick and really badly damage your immune response. So these are some of the items we have. We'd like a telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Again, William Griggs' book, Liberty and Eclipse. James H. Billington's book, The Librarian of Congress, of course, Fire in the Minds of Men. Nesta Webster's book, The French Revolution. My talk on the World Revolution, which is called World Revolution. It's the DVD, but of course, most of this information has never been presented before. Certainly my talk on the Forbidden Secret, which is so vitally important, and the syllabus goes with that, as well as my talk on the Planned Police State, and the syllabus goes with that. And then, of course, the book, The Fiat Money, Inflation in France, because if you read what happened in France in 1789,